attacked by Chandavega and the city of King Paranjan, the character of Kalya Kanya. Text number one. Narada Uvacha Itam Paranjanam Sadrag Vasha Maniya Vibramai Paranjani Maharaja Reme Rama Yati Patim. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Narada continued, "My dear king, after bewildering her husband in different ways and bringing him under her control, the wife of King Paranjan gave him all satisfaction and enjoyed sex life with him." Please repeat. The great sage Narada continued, "My dear king, after bewildering her husband in different ways and bringing him under her control, the wife of King Paranjan gave him all satisfaction and enjoyed sex life with him." Purport. After hunting in the forest, King Paranjan returned home, and after refreshing himself by taking a bath and enjoying nice food, he searched for his wife. When he saw her lying down on the ground without a bed, as if neglected and devoid of any proper dress, he became very much aggrieved. He then became attracted to her, began to enjoy her company. A living entity is similarly engaged in the material world in sinful activities. These sinful activities may be compared to King Paranjan's hunting in the forest. A sinful life can be counteracted by various processes of religion, such as jaga, vrata, and dana. That is, the performance of sacrifices, the taking of a vow for some religious ritual, and the giving of charity. In this way, one may become free from the reactions of sinful life and at the same time awaken his original Krishna consciousness. By coming home, taking his bath, eating nice foodstuffs, getting refreshed, and searching out his wife, King Paranjan came to his good consciousness and his family life. In other words, a systematic family life, as enjoined in the Vedas, is better than an irresponsible sinful life. If a husband and wife combine together in Krishna consciousness and live together peacefully, that is very nice. However, if a husband becomes too much attracted by his wife and forgets his duty in life, the implications of materialistic life will again resume. Srila Rupa Goswami has therefore recommended Anasaktasya Vishayan, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1-255. Without being attached by sex, a husband and wife may live together for the advancement of spiritual life. The husband should engage in devotional service, and the wife should be faithful and religious according to the Vedic injunctions. Such a combination is very good. However, the husband becomes too much attracted to the wife due to sex, the position becomes very dangerous. Women in general are very much sexually inclined. Indeed, it is said that a woman's sex desire is 9 times stronger than a man's. It is therefore a man's duty to keep a woman under his control by satisfying her, giving her ornaments, nice food, and clothes, and engaging her in religious activities. Of course, a woman should have a few children, and in this way not be disturbing to the man. Unfortunately, if the man becomes attracted to the woman simply for sex enjoyment, then family life becomes abominable. The great politician Chanaka Pandit has said, "Bharya Rupavati Shatru," a beautiful wife is an enemy. Of course, every woman in the eyes of her husband is very beautiful. Others may not see her as very beautiful, but the husband, being very much attracted to her, sees her always as very beautiful. If the husband sees the wife as very beautiful, it is to be assumed that he is too much attracted to her. This attraction is the attraction of sex. The whole world is captivated by the two modes of material nature, Rajaguna and Tamaguna, passion and ignorance. Generally, women are very much passionate and are less intelligent. Therefore, somehow or another, a man should not be under the control of their passion and ignorance. By performing bhakti yoga or devotional service, a man can be raised to the platform of goodness. If a husband situated in the mode of goodness can control his wife, who is in passion ignorance, the woman is benefited. Forgetting her natural inclination for passion ignorance, the woman becomes obedient and faithful to her husband, who is situated in goodness. Such a wife becomes very welcomed. The intelligence of the man and woman may work very nicely together, and they can make progressive march towards spiritual realization. Otherwise, the husband, coming under the control of the wife, sacrifices his quality of goodness and becomes subservient to the qualities of passion and ignorance. In this way, the whole situation becomes polluted. The conclusion is that a household life is better than a sinful life devoid of responsibility. But if in the household life the husband becomes subordinate to the wife, involvement in materialistic life again becomes prominent. In this way, a man's material bondage becomes enhanced. Because of this, according to the Vedic system, after a certain age, a man is recommended to abandon his family life for the stages of vanaprastha and sannyas. So the verse again, Naru vacha itam paranjanam sadriyak vashamaniya vibramai paranjani maharaja reme ramati patim. The great sage Narada continued, My dear king, after bewildering her husband in different ways and bringing him under her control, the wife of King Paranjan gave him all satisfaction and enjoyed sex life with him. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Satarna. This might be one of the more controversial purports. I don't know how everyone looks at things. But it's consistent with the rest of our philosophy. It's not actually a criticism of anyone. It's simply a explanation of the way the material world works. For instance, we can take out, well, in just the overview, that there's different types of intelligence, as I mentioned the other day. There's intelligence for liberation to get out of the bodily concept of life. And then there is the intelligence how to make the material world as comfortable as possible and to avoid the uncomfortable parts of the material world. People say they want liberation, but actually what they usually want is liberation from their miseries. But they don't. They want to keep the things that make them comfortable. So that's a kind of material intelligence. How to get free from our miseries, our problems, and how to make the material world a better situation. So in general, women have a better... Well, of course, when we talk about women in Kali Yuga, practically everyone's like a woman at best. Because there's, in Kali Yuga, there is only economic development, for the most part, for sense gratification. There's hardly any understanding what real Dharma is, and that it's meant to regulate our economic development, our sense gratification, so we can get factual liberation. Not just liberation from our miseries, but liberation from the bodily concept of life. Women, by nature, they're obviously going to have to be, by nature, a little bit more attached to the idea of seeking material comfort and avoiding misery because they have children. So far, men don't have children, although they're working on it. And because they have children, therefore they should be taking care of the children, and therefore you can't tell the child, you know, tolerate, you know, become more austere. You can't tell a newborn baby to become more tolerant and austere. Don't worry about what you eat. Don't worry about where you live. We're all going to move out into the forest and meditate, and you should do the same thing. Well, obviously, there are certain needs that the children have to have. And generally speaking, women always see their children as children. Even they're 70 years old, the mother still looks at her child as like a little her child. That's the way the material energy works. And therefore, they're always trying to make some arrangement so that things are as comfortable, as nice as possible. Without that side of material life, no one could actually survive in this world, unless you were born as some Sukadeva Goswami and walked out of the womb of your mother at 16 years old and went into the forest. But most children don't come out like that. Therefore, there's a certain amount of care that's necessary, and there has to be a certain amount of inspiration. It was all artificial. Actually, I'm not really your mother. The devotees used to have that kind of mentality. Devotees would go home, and the mother would come up and kiss the child, and the child would say, "Stop, wait, don't touch me. I'm not your child. I'm a spirit soul." So that used to warm the hearts of the mothers quite a bit to the movement. What happened? What did you do to my child? You killed my child. He's brainwashed, obviously. He's a zombie. No feelings, even for his mother. As I mentioned before, they had this at one court case. They brought forward, they were claiming that this girl was taken by the cult, and that the cult was so insensitive they couldn't care less what happened to the parents. And because this cult was insensitive, although her father was heartbroken and died from a heart attack due to separation from her child, the cult members couldn't care and said he deserved it. So they brought a picture of Narsingadev into the courtroom and asked the devotee who's on the witness stand, "Who is this? Is this your God?" Of course, he lied. Perjury. But anyhow, wasn't an intelligent thing to do. We lost $32 million anyhow. In any case, we didn't eventually lose $32 million, but the jury wasn't too happy with us. In any case, he said, "Is this your God? Who is this? Narsingadev. And who is this boy? This is his, who is this man on the lap? This is Hiranyakashipu. And who is this boy? This is Hiranyakashipu's son, Prahlad. So here is your God ripping apart this poor boy's father. And what is this boy doing? He's offering a garland to the killer. Is this your religion?" This is proof. That's why you didn't care that this girl's father died, because it's part of your religion to rip apart the parents. Because it wasn't a complete explanation of the background behind Narsingadev and Prahlad. In any case, this is how people may think. And this is sometimes how the devotees may think also. "Oh, don't touch me. You're a woman. I'm a brahmachari." No, there's a certain amount of natural interaction that we have to understand, that the material nature is working independently of the fact that we're spiritual souls. If we think, "Well, I'm a spiritual soul, and now I realize that now the material nature should work in a different way, and now men should become women and women should become men because we're spirit souls, or we should combine together and have a unisex a combination of the two." No, the consciousness may be balanced, but the duties more or less become the same. In other words, if you're in a particular machine, if you're driving a particular machine, It's not that you should imagine, well, now I'm in a Polsky Fiat, which is rather a slow car. I'm in a Polsky Fiat, but I realize I'm not the Polsky Fiat, so now I should imagine it's become a Jaguar, and I should run it down the street like a Jaguar. Or now I'm in a Jaguar, but I'm, you know, embarrassed being in a Jaguar, so I should treat it like a Polsky Fiat. No, whoever we may be, the driver, we're in a certain car, and it should be respected and driven according to the particular type of car that we're in. Then the passenger, or even in this case the driver, will become more comfortable and be more progressive, properly utilize the instrument. So in the material world you need a certain mentality until we all become liberated souls of trying to make the world livable in. In Kali Yuga, unfortunately, women don't have any knowledge and men have no knowledge. They don't know what making the world livable is. Although women may have some more knowledge, they know, for instance, they used to know you're supposed to eat, and therefore they would make food. Nowadays, women have forgotten that you're supposed to eat, people are supposed to eat, and therefore they don't even know how to cook anymore. Oh, I'm embarrassed, I'm a woman, they're asking me to cook. I got to do something insignificant like make food so people can eat. We're beyond that now. We're into technology. We'll eat the computer chips if we get hungry. Instead of eating potato chips, we'll eat computer chips. So people become so bewildered that they don't understand what is actually this, what is, even for progressive spiritual life, what is the basis? They're imagining themselves something that they're not. They're just living in the world of imagination. Virtual realities they're trying to create. They have no idea how to work in this reality, so therefore they're creating virtual realities and hoping to become happy there. They can't lord over the material nature properly, so they create some cartoon where they become one of the cartoon figures, and they're the king cartoon figure in the drama. So this is all very impractical. But actually eating is necessary, making a home so one could become comfortable and sleep. And proper relationships with each other. Here it mentions, of course, that when the man becomes too much attracted to the woman, then the natural tendency of the woman to try to please the man, make things comfortable, then she'll sacrifice, even if she has good intelligence. To the contrary, she'll try to become submissive. And therefore the whole house loses its purpose and simply becomes involved in sense gratification. But a certain amount of interaction on every level is necessary, proper interaction. Whether it to be earning money on the husband's part and the man's part, or making the house presentable and comfortable on the woman's part, trying to keep peace in the family, etc. This is all part of the idea, and then also raising children. Children are supposed to be an investment. Of course, nowadays they're just a hobby, expensive hobbies. The few that the parents get bored with after some time. We had a little kid, we'll you know, watch the little thing run around, squeak and shout a little while, have some fun with it. But after a while they get bored because they don't have any practical vision of what children are meant for also. Besides being educated in Krishna consciousness, children used to be become economic assets. Especially if you have a community where people are living in agricultural environment, then the children could actually be useful. They didn't run around, you know, playing, well, useless sports all the time, and then when they get bored, sit at home and they lose all their energy after 5 minutes of running around because their whole diet is Pepsi-Cola, Coca-Cola, and potato chips. Therefore, they have no energy. Therefore, their whole existence is sitting around killing things on a computer game. So that kind of activity means that they're useless. And then they grow up a little bit and they decide to test out their computer skills and kill real people. Therefore, such children are vana, sankhara, useless, and therefore no one wants to deal with them. Even the parents don't want to deal with them. But that's not what children were meant for. Children were meant to grow up and they would actually be responsible. They'd help out in the agricultural fields, they'd take care of the animals, they'd become educated, and ultimately they'd reciprocate the care that their parents gave them by taking care of the parents in old age. Nowadays, the parents are more or less in old age, they're considered useless. Better to throw them into some home that we can't see them anymore, or kill them as soon as possible. So this is all distorted, and it's not very healthy for material or spiritual progress. So when women give up, when everyone gives up, because women naturally have a propensity to take care of children, when they deny that and kill the children, and deny even cook, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, then the whole society becomes very disturbed. There's no shelter for anyone, anywhere. Therefore, the men, instead of going home at night, they simply go to the bar and get intoxicated and talk about all their problems. And the women that spend all the day on the telephone talking about their problems. But no one does anything practical, like cooking, or keeping the house clean. You know, it's all just, you know, these things are beneath our dignity. We're going to spend the whole day just complaining. So these things are not proper household life. They're not conducive either for material advancement or for spiritual advancement. On the other hand, when it says, for instance, here that women are 9 times more lusty, it means they're more interested in providing a nice, comfortable situation and avoiding problematic situations. Men are usually quite, they just want to earn some money in the material world and then go home and relax. They're not so much interested in paying the bills and doing so many other things, generally speaking. In any case, when things are going on properly in the material world, then the woman provides a nice household atmosphere, and the man, he, with his higher spiritual intelligence, it's not that the women don't have, in some respects, more intelligence, but we're talking about a different kind of intelligence. If women had the same kind of intelligence that men had, then they wouldn't take care of they wouldn't want to have children, they wouldn't take care of them, they wouldn't take care of the family life very well, if that was their intelligence. And if men had, when they had the same intelligence that the women have, they won't earn any money, nor will they try for spiritual elevation. They won't go through the austerities and the penances, whatever is necessary. So Krishna has provided certain intelligence to both of them so that they can combine together, just like we have intelligence within ourselves, intelligence that seeks for liberation from the material concept of life. And then we have intelligence that says, wait a second, I'm not that advanced that I can go, you know, I can fast into liberation. You know, I do have to still eat, and I should regulate my eating, and I should make the situation so that I'm living in a clean environment. I should immediately move out to a cave nearby and simply meditate into liberation. Now we have that intelligence too. So combined together with the two intelligence, we can arrange the situation in such a way is that we can make as comfortable a situation as necessary, at the same time seek for liberation. So one side is the generally the man's intelligence, the other side is the woman's intelligence. Don't rush into liberation. Try to make the situation livable before you become liberated, while you're becoming liberated. And the other is don't spend your whole time simply making the situation comfortable. Try to actually at the same time become liberated from the bodily concept of life. So when they combine together, it makes for a possibility of making spiritual progress. But if one side becomes too extreme, or one side tries to imitate the other, then it becomes disastrous, as Prabhupada says. If the man simply becomes interested in making his senses, gratifying his senses, and forgets about the purpose of life, namely liberation, or if the woman becomes so detached from family life that she also tries to become, she neglects the basic necessities of life, then the whole situation, the whole family life becomes very uncomfortable. The man's not satisfied, and the woman's not satisfied, no one's satisfied. So a balance has to be there. And then the whole idea is that if the balance is there, and they both strive, the center point is to become liberated from the bodily concept of life, then everything becomes spiritualized. They don't stop eating, but they offer the food to Krishna. The deity becomes the central point of the family life. The house is kept clean for the deity. The comforts are there. But in order to help the man and the family to engage in devotional service to Krishna, everything is there, but the center is Krishna. And then everyone's contribution becomes spiritual. Cooking the food is not simply a mundane activity for sense gratification. It becomes a spiritual activity. Keeping the house clean is not simply a mundane activity, but it's part of the marjanam, like in the temple, cleaning the temple for the deity. So the idea is that when the deity is put into the center and everyone, as Prabhupada said, janma, what is it? Asaktir anabhishvanga putra dara grihadishu, that detachment from wife, children, home, and the rest. So Prabhupada says that this detachment doesn't mean that one neglects the family. It means detachment from sense gratification. Not that every time I look at my wife or I look at my husband, I simply think about sense gratification. No, one should remember Krishna. When one sees everyone, including the wife or the husband. And why is that? Because when we engage everyone in Krishna's service, that's what we'll remember. So Prabhupada said, what is the formula? It's very simple. Our spiritual formula is not to move into the forest with a wife and children and fast for 2 years into liberation. Watch the little babies leave their bodies and become liberated into the spiritual world. No, our program is sit down morning and evening and chant Hare Krishna and have the deity, offer the food to the deity, and hear something about Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita. That makes the whole atmosphere very spiritual. And then there's four regular principles for everyone. And that way the family life, although it's not going to become perfect, this idea that I got married to Radharani and she's going to serve me just like she serves Krishna, or I got married to Narayan with four arms or two arms and he's going to maintain me and protect me just like Narayan protects, you know, Lakshmi. Well, that's not the way the world works. There's always going to be some problems. Prabhupada said it's not going to be perfectly happy. But if the basis is advancement in Krishna consciousness, then with a certain amount of tolerance there'll be progress and things will turn out better than they could have turned out in any other way. So we'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Yes. Of course, Krishna. So the question is something about how can we see the woman bringing the man under the control and that the man is becoming a victim of this?
My question is it really possible that we are victims without having some interest actually?
No, no one's a victim. The question is it possible that we're victims? No, we're not victims, we're responsible. But
the man has voluntarily become a victim, and the woman has become a victim too. That everyone has come here to serve Maya, and therefore we become victims of Maya. But we think, because Maya is very clever, Maya doesn't say, come here and become a victim. No, come here and become my lord. But actually, we become victims of illusion. But the whole thing gets turned around as soon as we do things for Krishna, that's all. That when a woman brings, if a woman brings the man under the control by dressing nicely and having nice food, prasad, etc., and she, just like in the story of King, what was his name? Priyavrata Maharaj. So Priyavrata Maharaj, he was living on the top of a mountain with being instructed by Narada Muni about detachment. But sometime Lord Brahma, Swayambhuva Manu came with Lord Brahma and Indra, a few other Mahajans, Lord Shiva I guess was there too, and Lord Brahma told that Swayambhuva Manu, it's about time for him to retire. He needs someone to take over the universe. So he wants you to take over the universe, so you should do it. You should leave your position as being a brahmachari, get married, and take over the universe. So since Lord Brahma is the grandfather and one of the chief Mahajans in the universe, Paranjan didn't have any choice. Priyavrata Maharaj, he didn't have any choice. So he got married. So he was a self-realized soul. So his wife didn't think, well, he's a self-realized soul. Why should I dress nicely? He's not going to appreciate anyhow. Why should I act like a woman? He knows I'm actually a spirit soul. It's just going to be a waste of time. No, she played her part very nicely. And he also played his part nicely. Not that, you know, why did you dress so nicely? You're just wasting your time, you know. Don't glance at me like that. You know, do you know who I am? No, he played his part nicely, and that way she was enlivened, he was enlivened, the universe went on nicely. But internally, Maharaj Priyavrata, he knew that he was actually a spirit soul, that he was doing it on behalf of Krishna. He was playing his part on behalf of Krishna, but he played the part. He knew the part he was supposed to play. So this idea that these parts that men and women are playing in the material world, they're just a waste of time and useless and they have no value, that's wrong. They do have a part to play. That's how the universe goes on properly. But we shouldn't become overwhelmed by it and forgetful of our real position, that we're actually just an instrument for Krishna, that we're aloof, we're actually apart from these things. But we should agree to play the part. If we're on stage, Prabhupada gives the example, you know, we may be playing in Macbeth or something. And when it's time to give the king poison, I think in Macbeth, I can't remember. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Macbeth, the king gets poisoned, actually, but he gets stabbed. I'm thinking Romeo and Juliet. Romeo and Juliet. Yeah, when it's time to stab the king, we can't think, well, wait a second, I got the part to kill the king, but I'm nonviolent. This is not a good example for everyone else. So I'm just going to throw the dagger down and say, to be or not to be, that is the question. No, we have to play the part and the role properly, and then we're doing our duty. And at the same time, we shouldn't get so involved in the play that we actually take a real dagger and stab the king. That wouldn't be very good either. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.